1%. Strike for public education. Strike for a brighter day. Strike for the lives of children. Strike for the right to say. So we will strike against the closures. Strike for a brighter day. Strike for the lives of children. Strike for the right to say. We will strike.
I'm walking out to support our faculty and to put the administration on notice that they cannot waste our tuition dollars on frivolous real estate deals while our faculty suffers as one of the least paid in the nation.
I'm walking out because I want to go to school spring term, but I want our teachers to be supported.
I'm walking out because as a future teacher, I'd expect students to walk in solidarity for me.
I'm walking out because I am disillusioned with the amount of disengagement on campus, and I want to see students involved and taking part of our university.
I'm walking out because I'm unhappy with the budget decisions being made by the administration at PSU.
I'm walking out because I want the quality that I'm paying for.
Those are the voices of Portland State University students who are planning to walk out of classes tomorrow, Thursday, February 27th at 11:30 a.m. to join with teachers at a rally in the South Park blocks at noon. Prior to that, you heard David Rovick's new song on the Portland teacher struggle, The Lives of Children. You may have heard that Portland State University, American Association of University Professors Union, and the Portland State University administration declared impasse on Monday. What this means is that students and faculty will no longer be involved in a mediation with the administration, and it sets a timeline for a strike, a 30 days timeline, if a negotiation is not reached. This morning, we are joined by two Portland State University professors and one student to talk about the situation at the local public university, Portland State University. Patricia Schechter is a professor of history who teaches women's history and public history with a focus on civil rights and labor, who's taught at PSU since 1995. Good morning, Patricia. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, good to be here.
And we have Jose Padin. He's a professor of sociology. He's been with the university for 18 years. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
I want to start off by asking Sonia, who is joining us by phone, why are you walking out of class tomorrow?
Hi, Jenka. Well, I think it's a very important issue, and we all decided that we need to support the faculty because they are the backbone of our education, and without them, we have no education. In addition to other problems that students face with the administration. It's very important for us to support professors.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the issues. Maybe we could start with Patricia Schechter. What are some of the issues facing the faculty at Portland State University?
Well, our protest is really about three things that come out of bargaining. One is to ensure the stability, the long-term stability of our faculty and accountability to students. This means resisting the pressure to shorten contracts and move to a more part-time and contingent faculty. So we're really there for our students over the long haul. The second piece has to do with the historic rights that faculty have to shape the curriculum and to review one another in terms of evaluation and promotion. This means keeping decision-making close to the classroom, right? That's part of our contract and the historic way that faculties do business on university campuses. And the third thing has to do with fair compensation and the ways in which we must fight the drift on campus to that instruction is really a declining part of our budget. We have to resist that.
And Professor Jose Padin, I wonder if you have anything to chime in on the negotiations that have been going on since, I guess, last May they started between the American Association of University Professors and the administration.
Yeah, that's correct. It's almost a year already, 11 months. I'd say that what's gotten us to the current crisis and the difference between the agreement we've proposed to the university and their proposal is the difference between bad management and good management. We have a long list of concerns, and they're very difficult to communicate. It's easy for it to start sounding like inside ball. And I was having a conversation with someone outside Portland State University recently, and this person said to me, you know, I'm actually a professor of management. I didn't know this. And I have 20 years of private sector experience too. And in what I teach in the literature, there's a difference between servant leadership and bad management. And your university is exhibiting a textbook case of bad management. Good management motivates, bad management alienates. Good management inspires confidence because it shows good judgment and sense of priorities. In this case, the priorities are where the money is going. Bad management thinks it does, but the way it acts exhibits a very poor sense of priorities. Good management communicates respect and genuine appreciation for the people who do most of the work, in this case, the educators. Bad management shows contempt and does not show genuine appreciation, communicates very clearly false appreciation. Good management invests in the stability of its educators. Bad management undermines that stability. Good management unites all stakeholders around a common mission. In this case, academic professionals, researchers, teachers, and students. Bad management plays them against each other and divides them. Good management confuses power over with power to achieve. That's bad management. Good management knows the difference. Bad management doesn't even know that it's bad.
Wow. Well, that's a lot of kind of general statements, and I'm not going to let you just get away with that. We want to talk about some specifics.
I would hope not. Cable has standards.
Yes, and I would say, you know, President Vim Vival, the president of Portland State University, considers himself to be a good president, a good manager, and that he's leading this university in a good direction. And I want to just play a clip of Vim Vival speaking at the Portland City Club in December and then get your responses as far as his idea on what the challenges are facing higher education and what his priorities are as to addressing it.
These are extraordinarily difficult and challenging times in the higher education world. As you know, we're going through this whole technology upheaval with open online courses, the funding challenges, the increased pressures for accountability, very much due to the fact that state support has been declining, therefore tuition has been going up, therefore student debt is rising. So understandably, people are asking much tougher questions than they did 10 or 20 years ago. To try to navigate through this challenging world and to see where are we going to be, how can we best serve the original mission of the university, it helps to have a bunch of smart people with a whole range of experiences in different parts of life to help a president and his executive team think about the future. They're not the only ones, they're not the ones determining and setting it, but they can be very helpful. The second main purpose is that, as you all know, higher education has been grossly underfunded, particularly in Oregon, being 46th or 47th in the nation, and David has written about that more times. It somehow or other hasn't solved the problem yet, so keep writing.
I've seen it before.
Keep writing. But having a group of advocates, and I think that's where all the boards can work together. We will now have at least three boards. Clearly, there will continue to be a fourth board, at least for all the four other universities or more of them. That's a great group of advocates for higher education in the state, and I think that, again, that will be beneficial for all of higher
I think that clip got cut off. And what President Vim Vival is talking about there is the Oregon Board of Higher Education being split into independent boards, and at least some of the public universities in Oregon now being run by these more independent boards separated from the state. And Patricia, maybe you want to comment on the impact that has had, if any, on what's happening at Portland State University.
Sure. I think I would agree with President Vival and many other commentators around the state that we're at a historic juncture in public higher ed in Oregon. And there are many causes for that. What's happening is the campuses are becoming more independent and less coordinated and less There's less of a sense of shared mission around students moving through systems from community college to Portland State and the higher ed area. And we're competing more. We're competing more for dollars. We're competing for degree completion. We're competing for a kind of a quantifiable sense of accomplishment to, again, compete for shrinking dollars in Salem. And what we're saying on campus is that we have a responsibility to defend quality in that. And the clip said that people are asking tougher questions of higher education. I wouldn't necessarily say they're tougher, but they're different. There are different questions about money, about who controls money, where the buck stops in terms of accountability to students. And PSUAAP's position is faculty have a responsibility to defend quality for our students. What goes on in the classroom? What goes on in the libraries? How are students nurtured and mentored over the long term? If education is a K-life proposition, then we need institutions that are really available and responsive in the long term. And I think what we're seeing in our contract is a real challenge to the historic, think of a triangle, the historic triangle of governance on campus between the administration, our faculty senate, and our union. And between the three of us, we have this triangle where we talk, we have each other's back, we have different frames to sort of press back and think together about how to lead the campus. By the administration is proposing real changes, real challenges to our contract and historic shared governance, particularly around peer review and evaluation of faculty performance. And without that, they're sort of collapsing the triangle into more of a tug of war between the faculty senate and the administration. We think, and at the end of the day, the senate is really an advisory body. It doesn't have the same binding power as our contract does. So by collapsing governance from a triangle to more of a tug of war, we see that as a loss for our historic 35 years tradition of strong shared governance on campus. And we'd like to see that protected, particularly with the new institutional board coming on in July. That's going to tilt, we fear, into more of this tug-of-war model as opposed to a triangle with multiple stakeholders.
And some, of course, have argued that this is a move towards a privatization of the public university system in Oregon. I see, Jose, you're wanting to get a word in about President Vim Vivel's comments. And, of course, we want to make sure to talk to Sonia, who we have on the line, a student at Portland State University. Jose?
Yeah, my reaction to that clip, there is not much that is very specific in what President Vivel is saying there. It's fairly broad and general rhetoric. It's along the lines of saying, life is becoming tougher for working mothers. More than ever, we should be happy to celebrate Mother's Day. And we say, okay, that's a good start. Now, let's look at your budget. Do you have pro-working mother budget priorities or not? In this case, President Vivel is talking about or makes reference to the original mission of the university. We've been looking at President Vivel's administration budget priorities, and they don't seem to be moving in the direction of the original mission of the university. Our faculty and academic professionals have been surveyed on how they feel about the direction of the university. And depending on the question, President Vivel has a 10 to a 25% approval rate. Running very close to the U.S. Congress.
Well, just looking at Portland State University in the last couple of years, it looks like they were in a boom time there. I mean, you see all kinds of construction going on. You see new development projects. The university's been buying up property at the waterfront, and there's all kinds of new building going on at the university. Is that the kind of priority you're talking about?
The university does need physical plant, so expansion is not necessarily bad, but we do have some bad real estate deals. Our university is bleeding millions of dollars a year in a hotel. We could just get rid of it or just close it and use the real estate to build new classroom space, but that hasn't happened. We've had a lot of tuition money go into athletics, money-losing ventures. Students, when they pay their tuition bill, they're not given a checklist that allows them to opt out. Do you want to be a shareholder that doesn't get returns to a hotel? Do you want to fund your classroom or athletic teams? 27% of our budget goes into direct instruction now. That does not seem to be solidly aligned with the broader rhetoric we heard in the clip. We are asking tough questions.
And I want to ask Sonia, is that the kind of priority that you're seeing at the university and where you're wanting your tuition dollars to go?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I see that every single day as I walk by these facilities and just see how the administration interacts with students. As the professors are trying to hold the administration more accountable, so are the students. In our group, the Student Action Coalition, we're trying to employ direct action tactics towards holding the administration accountable. Last term, we were collecting signatures for a petition. One of the clauses was actually to freeze the administrative salaries at $100,000. And so we collected around 800 signatures and marched up to President Wevel's office and handed him the petition with the signatures. And he was very dismissive of us, our voice doesn't even matter. And one of the biggest parts of this issue and why we want to hold the administration accountable is because students pay 80% of the operating budget in the school and are going into insurmountable debt because of it. And we feel that it's just not right, and it really doesn't fit in with our moral belief. We believe that public education should be free, and that's what we're trying to work towards in the long haul.
And if you're just joining us, we're talking about the teacher struggle at Portland State University. Students are set to walk out tomorrow in support of the teachers who've reached an impasse in their negotiations with the university administration. We are speaking with Sonia. She's a student at Portland State University. We also have two professors in the studio, Patricia Schechter, a professor of history, and Jose Padin, a professor of sociology. We are going to be taking your calls, and the number to call is 503-231-8187. And we've got Heidi, who is a student at Portland State University. And Heidi, how does this how does this reflect with your experience as a student there?
Are you there? I have you on speakerphone. You all actually know me. I'm Heidi from Super. So I know you, Danka, Sonia. Hi, Sonia. And hey, Jose. They're all doing amazing work. The reason why I'm calling is because I would like to add some more information to the conversation about exactly what our hypocritical president is up to. I have been at Portland State for about 4+ years, and I have seen that growing privatization. I've seen cuts to the many of the programs like Black Studies and Indigenous Studies. We have this beautiful Native American Studies Center that PSU can say they've got, Chicano Latino Center, all of these things, except they cut the funding to all of those programs. So he's all about making himself look good, which is absolutely ridiculous. On top of that, I just found out recently that he also spent tens of thousands of PSU dollars to redo his residence because his wife didn't like the decor. And I find that absolutely appalling. He's also been at several events at PSU where he puts the blame back on the students that we just don't know how to manage our money, and that's why we can't deal with our student debt. And many students have challenged that thinking.
And at the same time, we're being extorted at every single step of our education. Yep. We have to pay for every single little thing. The fact that we even have Higher One at our university is outrageous.
Wait, let's talk about Higher One just for a second, because this is something that I found pretty interesting, is that university students at Portland State University are now issued a student ID card that's actually a MasterCard.
Yep. Yes.
And how does that work?
Do you want me to take that up, or Sonia? Because I've had that card.
Go ahead, Heidi.
Well, it's basically like a credit card, but they charge you these ridiculous fees. There's only two versatellers down on campus, and the majority of PSU students are actually commuter students. So I can't, you know, I don't have a car. I got to get down there. If I don't want to, basically, it costs me $5 to get any money out of my account. Non-hire one institution fee and then some other fee from some other versateller. So, like, that's really inconvenient for working people. And I just want to also say thank you, Jose, for mentioning working moms. I'm a single working mother. I've been going to school. And I'm sick of being demonized about how hard, you know, we work so hard and we do so much, but we get so little. But it's always our fault, of course. And so, but these cards are absolutely ridiculous because there's all these hidden fees, and I keep getting notices because I haven't been registered for a while that they're going to charge me this crazy, like, $25 a month or something to keep the card. Well, I can't afford to get another credit card, so it's sort of like, what do I do, right? And then I just found out, you know, I'm looking at graduation, and there's all these other new fees, and actually the advisor and I were kind of laughing about that. He's like, yeah, just one more way to get, you know, money out of students. And so at every turn, it's absolutely ridiculous. But I actually, I do have something that I think Jose could address, because we had a panel discussion with community labor activists not too long ago talking about the lead up to the strike.
Well, one second, Heidi. I think Patricia wanted to weigh in on the PSU One MasterCard issue.
Oh, sorry.
And,
okay.
And then we'll get more into the negotiations. And I want to also talk about those cuts to specialty programs that Sonia and Heidi were mentioning.
Thank you. Not so much to hire one, but just the general theme that students are voicing. Just a personal story, you know, students come into my office in tears. And they say, Patricia, I cannot afford to stay in school. And I cannot afford to graduate. In other words, students' financial situation is like a trap. And this is not sustainable. It's not fair. And this is, I think, part why the faculty feels so compelled to speak up about the, as Jose was saying, the direction of the budget and the drift away from direct instruction, the drift away from the classroom and libraries to support quality and accountability to students. It's not sustainable. Our students are getting terrible messages from this historical moment that they will not be able to compete without a college degree. And yet our society is not doing enough to make sure that they can get one without, you know, damaging their ability to function outside after they graduate.
You know, the American Association of University Professors put together a report about Portland State University, including information that between 2002 and 2012, the cost of tuition and fees increased 86% for resident undergraduates and 79% for resident graduate students. 2012 rates for tuition and fees for resident undergraduates were over 400 times higher than they were 25 years ago in 1987. When adjusted for inflation, the increase is 158%. So really rapidly increasing tuition and fees at Portland State University. And Heidi, you had something else that you wanted to address.
You actually just made me realize something. I'd like to add another, like, this whole financial dimension is ridiculous. So here's the deal too. If you thought you were getting grant money, or they cut you off from financial aid, and then you have to finance your education on your own, here's what happens. If you call them prior to your tuition bill being due, either at the end of the term or even halfway through the term, they will not set up a payment plan. They tell you that you have to wait until you're late, and then they're going to charge you not only 10% of whatever it is you owe, but a $100 late fee. You cannot call them in good faith and say, hey, I'm going to get behind. Can you set up a payment plan? That's outrageous and corrupt as far as I'm concerned. So I just got through negotiating away from getting sent to collections, and I made them take my money because I said, I'm going to give you this chunk of money and you're not going to take my money. And so, like, I had to fight really, really hard. But I've been in tears, like the professor was saying, in some of my professors' offices, because it's just absolutely outrageous. And, you know, we're demonized. Students are demonized. We just can't handle our money, like I'd said before. But the last point I wanted to make is something that
Jose had mentioned at the panel about the amount of bureaucracy that's increased along with the tuition. And so that's where a lot of the money's going, and no one's talking about that. Like, not you folks, but Wim doesn't talk about that. And so that's a big part of where our tuition dollars are increasing, to pay for more bureaucracy to make them comfortable. So I don't want to take up more time, but I just wanted to put that on the table as well. So. Mm.
And the budget cuts that have been talked about are not new. And in 2011, I have a clip of a student talking about some of these same issues, the cuts to the specialty programs.
As far as I'm concerned, when you allow an institution to fall between the cracks of financial stress to the point of restructuring is nothing but an acknowledgement of a high level of financial mismanagement. The continual system of accruing debt and credit lines and requests for debt forgiveness has been allowing administration of universities, including our own, to follow up in cleaning house for specialty programs. Cleaning houses and kicking them out and consolidating them, such as Black Studies, Chicano Latino Studies, Native American Studies, and Women's Studies, or programs.
And, of course, talking about specialty programs, and Patricia Schechter, you're a professor of history, but you teach women's history, and women's studies, of course, is always on the chopping block, is one that could be cut as far as university programs, and I wonder if you just have a comment on that.
Well, I'm not sure they're special. You know, we all the programs we try to offer our students have their own place in the curriculum. They, you know, we can't hire faculty without a very elaborate process of curriculum review and requests for hire, and it's a highly thoughtful process. So I think you're right that sometimes certain programs get sort of marked or stereotyped as expendable or special interest, but far from that. The way we proceed as a faculty is to have, you know, very careful and deliberate discussions about what students need, what's happening in the field, and how we can interact, right, with our own historical moment. So I think I draw that out to say that one of the things that we're very aware of in AAUP is that the administration is not accountable for their decisions in the way that faculty are hyper accountable to one another by custom, but also in this new moment of budgetary stress, we're being asked to justify ourselves more and more, and that's not shared with, you know, there's no review of administrators. You know, administrators review faculty all the time, annually. It's constant, but we do not have that reciprocal review of administrators, right? What about their performance review? And that did come up in bargaining, and we got nowhere with that kind of shared, again, the notion of shared governance, the notion of collaborative, deliberative processes to steer the university in the direction of student interests and the community's interests.
And of course, this Portland State University struggle comes in the midst of the Portland public teachers struggle, and they're coming up for a vote on a contract that just narrowly averted a strike. And of course, we've got the struggle down in Medford, Oregon, with the public teachers, K-12 teachers there as well. It seems like there's a almost nationally, we hear about some of these issues in Chicago and in California. In many places, teachers are going through some of these same issues. And we're going to talk a little more about what's going on behind that. I want to thank Heidi and Sonia for joining us. We are in the studio with Professors Patricia Schechter and Jose Padin at Portland State University. And we'll come right back with your calls at 503-231-8187. And we've got Brian on the line. But first, I just want to play a little bit of music from David Rovics, his site, davidrovics.com. Everything can change. And then we'll get to the rest of your calls.
1, 2, 3, 4. First you have to have a problem. That part isn't hard. The second step is everybody realizing they're like you. They're holding the same card. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do, and everything can change. So quick. businessmen and TV sets. We'll try hard to make sure it isn't so. You don't have a problem. If you do, it's not the same problem. And if it is, well, there's just nowhere you can go. But that many times the history is rich, though we easily forget how a meme can take hold and grab you, how it can spread out like a net, and everything can change.
David Rovics, Everything Can Change. And again, we are joined by two Portland State University professors, Patricia Schechter and Jose Padin. And the American Association of University Professors at Portland State University this week declared impasse in bargaining with the administration, which is led by President Vim Vivel. This declaration of impasse moves the parties closer to a potential strike. This would be the first strike of professors and education professionals at a public university in Oregon's history. Some of the key issues for faculty include a student-centered budget, faculty stability, and protecting the voice of educators in classroom and university decisions. We've got Brian on the line, and we are taking your calls at this time. The number is 503-231-8187 to participate in this conversation. Brian?
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to lay out an observation I've made. I live up by PSU here. And it has to be grossly mismanaged. I visit different buildings during the day. I'm an in-home caregiver, and one building I visit has just a ton of foreign students in it, and none of them, and the management has told me that none of them had any idea when they came to this country. I guess they had enrolled outside of the country, limited English skills. And what happened was they got here, there was no housing for them at all. And they were told by the administration, I've actually talked to a few of them, and they were told by the administration, well, you're here, just go find an apartment. So these guys are like literally wandering around the streets of Portland looking for a place to live so they can go to school, and they're from a completely different country, completely different culture, with limited English skills, and they don't even know the rules of renting an apartment. They have no idea. I also, living in this area over the past year, I've had at least two people walk up to me who told me they were going to PSU, and they said, do you know where I could find a place to live? I enrolled here, and they were all foreign students. And it's just, I mean, there's no support system for these kids. And, I mean, can you imagine sending your kid to Portland and they get here and they're told by the administration, well, we don't have any housing like we promised you or like we said we would, so go find a place to live. Mm-hmm. And don't forget to go to class. So I would put that under gross mismanagement, as you guys were talking about. That's my little observation.
Well, thanks, Brian, a local resident in downtown Portland. And I wonder if either of you, Jose and Patricia, have a response to that, the issue of housing for students.
Well, maybe not so much housing per se, but I will say that one of the ways that the big universities in the state have tried to compensate for divestment by the public legislature, by the state legislature, is to court students from out of state and court international students as well and charge them a higher tuition rate. And, you know, administrators are very upfront. I've been to Salem and listened to a lot of testimony in the last 2 years. And administrators are very upfront about this strategy with our lawmakers. And our lawmakers are surprisingly shocked and in almost in disbelief of this strategy, because of course they have a very state-centered, homegrown approach to thinking about public higher ed, understandably so. And this is one of the lesser-known strategies about trying to make the budgets balance. And I think I agree with the caller that our campuses could do more to support all kinds of diversity on our campuses. I hope that a more student-centered budget would deliver those kinds of supports.
Mm. I mean, one of the things that the university administration has said during these negotiations is that they're going into this in good faith. They are initiating an administrative pay freeze. What, in your minds, as professors, does that actually mean? Is that disingenuous? Are they not engaging in a pay freeze?
Well, it's outright dishonest. The pay freeze was in reaction to a study put together by the American Association of University Professors jointly with the Portland State University Academic Senate, which identified $17 million of immediate savings, challenging President Vivelle's claims that we're facing a $15 million structural deficit. The deficit disappeared. In the process, we identified the following facts. In addition to the rising tuition over the last decade, I think you cited the figure of 86%, we were able to identify 50% growth in top management salaries, while faculty salaries have been flat in the last decade. In reaction to these revelations, did we get from the administration some token gestures, freezing? They claim we haven't seen a new budget, but after a decade of just runaway growth in management compensation, too little, too late, dishonest.
And in their response to the public statement by the American Association of University Professors challenging some of their numbers, Portland State University says, the issue is not whether one PSU employee group or another is overcompensated. None are. The issue is that compensation for all other university employee groups has increased more than revenues. And well, I'm not sure if what you're talking about is just that the administrators are being having their salaries increased at a much higher level than professors, or is there something else going on?
Well, yes. The answer to that is yes. That's what I was not intimating, just saying outright clearly. Faculty salaries, we have a study conducted by a research center at Florida International University earlier this academic year that looks at different categories of faculty salaries, and overall in the last decade, faculty salaries have stayed just stable, haven't made any gains above inflation, whereas administration salaries, especially top administration salaries, have increased substantially, anywhere from 29 to 50%.
We've got, Patricia?
I just want to chime in. You know, we can talk about the numbers, and I have a few I'll share. For example, the number of executive administrators has increased 65% in the last decade on campus. So that's a big increase. But my point is, how does the notion of faculty pay. We can talk about who gets a raise, who doesn't, who gets a freeze, who doesn't. But the point is that to defend quality education, that faculty salaries directly impact the quality of student education. And they do so in three ways. One is in the university's ability to attract and retain and grow a world-class faculty that our community deserves. The second way the faculty pay touches quality is that, like my students who can't afford to stay in school or graduate, our faculty cannot afford to take their sabbaticals to do research, and they can't afford not to take their sabbaticals and do research. They're in a very similar sort of paralysis, because in order to do their best and be their best, they have to pursue their research. They have to do new things. They have to stay current. They have to stay fresh. And yet we have faculty who have to teach in the summer. We have faculty who teach year-round, who, like public school teachers, put their own dollars into the classroom. I had last spring when President Vivelle came to our history department, I just did a quick straw poll at the table. I said, how many faculty have bought personal books to put in the library? Just about everybody raised their hand. Okay. So students... And the third way that faculty pay touches quality is that students know they're paying more for less access to their mentors and teachers. And it's a kind of it's the elephant in the room. Students are paying more, but where's the money going? It's not going to the library. It's not going to instruction. It's not going to stabilize the faculty. And that is why we have to speak out.
And, of course, in the statement by the American Association of University Professors, it talks about the poorly performing real estate, athletics, and business startups, including University Place Hotel, which it costs $6.8 million a year. And a student called and asked about the new sports center. I see in the university's numbers that they put out that athletics personnel cost $2.1 million and academic rent for athletics, $900,000 coming out of the general fund, but no specific numbers on that athletic center. And I don't know, you mentioned that it's more about tuition money going to some of these auxiliary projects, but I want, as some of these numbers are so outrageous that I think it's worth just checking into. And I've got a clip of Fran Michelle from last week's Old Mole Variety Hour here on KBOO talking about some of these issues.
An analysis carried out by Florida International University's Center for Labor Research and Studies shows that between 2002 and 2012, the number of executive administrators, level of assistant dean and up, increased 65% from 31 to 51. In addition, adjusting for inflation, the provost's salary shot up by 46%. The vice provost's average salaries leaped by 43%. Vice president's average salaries rose by 29%. Associate vice president's average salaries grew by 19%. And assistant vice president's average salaries increased by 23%. This is while most faculty salaries declined in real dollars. Yet in the last year, the administration has canceled classes and tried to cut programs. And they've also demanded across-the-board cuts from remaining academic units. But pushback from students and faculty has already succeeded in getting the administration to revise downward its projected supposed shortfall of funds by over $10 million. And the remaining needed cuts could be more than addressed by rolling back administrative salary and benefits to
2011 levels, I think is what she was ending up saying there when that got cut off. Patricia, are those numbers accurate?
Well, they're the ones that we have been studying all term, all year rather, and they're disconcerting, particularly if you look at the last decade of among our compensation among our most vulnerable faculty, our part-time fixed-term instructors and our academic professionals. These are often the behind-the-scenes unseen workers at Portland State, and fixed-term instructor salaries fell 7%. In the last decade, and academic professionals fell by 3%. So whereas tenure line faculty can maybe talk about a flat salary situation, our most fragile and our least protected colleagues are going backwards. And again, we have to speak out. We are a team. We are one. We are all focused on a quality education for students. And we're in this together, and we cannot erode and exploit the labor of these important colleagues on our campus.
We've got a couple of callers on the line, so I want to bring in the next caller to Eric.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to offer my support to both the students and the faculty. It's very interesting to hear that the last person who spoke, I'm sorry I didn't catch who that was, talked about the solidarity between the tenured professors and the part-time teachers. That seems to be the biggest scam in American higher education over the last few years, or many years perhaps, where these people are teaching our young the future of the country, and yet they're basically are making minimum wage. And I really applaud the tenured professors that they've noticed that problem and that they are in it together. I also graduated from PSU in 07 when the new MasterCard came in as the ID, and I still had an old ID, and it was a struggle over my last two terms, I think, where I basically refused to use the MasterCard, and I still used my old ID at the library, and it was pretty interesting. I always carried the MasterCard with me, but I was still using my old-fashioned, just a picture ID, and it was pretty interesting to see. 20 years at PSU, it grew from a school where you knew what you were getting to now having the football program and incredible buildings, and costs skyrocketed. So I really applaud everyone who's trying to do some changes, because they're surely needed.
Well, thanks for that statement of support. And I just want to get the next caller in, and then we'll get responses from our guests. Jim.
Yeah, I've been following the politics of PSU for a long time, and it's really gotten to be a pretty huge mess for everybody concerned. And I just wanted to bring up yet one other outrage that Wim Weevil has done recently. I mean, the American Studies Association called for a academic boycott of Israel, and on January 14th of this year, Wim Weevil sent out a statement denouncing that, denouncing the call for a boycott of Israeli institutions, and actually implied, well, I'll just read the last sentence here. The totality of the practices and beliefs of the country, being Israel, does not even come close to meriting a boycott. Indeed, the ASA action has encouraged me to strengthen my pursuit of academic exchanges between Portland State University and Israeli institutions. So I just want to point out that, you know, in addition to screwing over the students, the faculty, the administration of PSU is pursuing a collaboration with Israel. And even as Palestinian students, you know, try to organize, they've put together a letter challenging Wim Weevil's rhetoric, but I just want to draw it out there because it's really outrageous. I mean, the whole Wim Weevil, man, he's got to go. And that's what we should be calling for.
So critiques of the university president at a number of levels. And, of course, that's maybe the topic for another program, I think, Tim. That would be an interesting program to look into that issue. But I wanted to just get a response from Patricia or Jose about the last caller before Tim, about the kind of conflict between tenured professors and some of the part-time faculty members that are brought in without a possibility of a long-term job stability.
Sure, I'd be glad to comment. You know, our faculty, the public compact, the public trust that public education represents in our society has to do with some very precious values to our society. And those have to do with free inquiry and academic freedom. And our tenure system, like the Supreme Court and other sort of special areas of our society, the tenure system is designed to really ensure freedom of thought, freedom to explore new and controversial ideas, and to face our students fully and confidently about welcoming answers to those questions, answers that might be uncomfortable, answers that might be controversial. And the erosion of tenure and shared governance that the increasing hiring of part-time and fixed-term faculty represents is a direct erosion of the public trust and the viability of academic freedom for our students. If we circumscribe faculty voices, we circumscribe student voices. And that runs counter to the high purpose, right, of public education, which is to empower students to embrace the challenges around them and ask the tough questions and explore answers that may not be popular, that may not be comfortable. But to do that work, again, with confidence and with trust in one another. So, you know, I think that our fixed-term and part-time colleagues face a real uphill battle. And I know the AUP, in terms of their stability on our campus, their ability to grow as professionals, their ability to honor their commitments to students, to pursue their research, to remain viable professionals. And I think the tenure line faculty understand that we're in this together, that our work is one. And I think AUP has made every effort to try to build that solidarity and commitment, and I think we're seeing that in our rallies, in our events, in our messaging, and in the positions that we've taken in public for years now.
And I wanted to bring Jose in. Maybe you could address this, the claim by critics that tenure gives job security to poor teachers and that good teachers don't need tenure, which is a similar claim to what to critics of unions say about workers who are involved in a union.
It's a self-serving claim. We have elevated Portland State University over the last 25 years to what it is today. And we've done it selflessly. We are not compensating, are not compensated commensurately with other professionals. That's our choice. Okay. About our colleagues, our part-time workers and workers without stable contracts. That's one of the major things in the agreement that we have proposed and one of the things we're ready to strike on. A high-performance work organization rewards good contributions, and an essential reward is giving some stability to our temp faculty, as it were. They currently get a six-month non-renewal notice. That's not good enough. You can't plan year in and year out for your family budget with that type of notice. We've tried to push it to a year. That's our proposal, and we want to make it 2 and 3 years. The administration wants to dismiss this largest category of our workforce with 10, 11 weeks notice. That is not acceptable. Our contract offer, our offer for a collective agreement, above all, wants to protect the weakest among us. We're talking about very highly skilled and dedicated workers, people with PhDs who are dismissed on a whim and paid. The bottom salary is $37,000 and change. And the vast majority of them receive close to that. That is not acceptable. I want to say one final thing before we leave. I have to give a shout out to all of the students who are standing up, not just at Portland State University, but in Portland Public Schools, in Chicago, and in everywhere in the country, because they're an incredible source of inspiration, and they demonstrate that this fight for education is part of a historical movement for making education a right, a universal right. They're standing up for it with us because students get it. Also, students are workers at our university, and they see their professors and academic professionals treated very poorly as workers, and they say, my gosh, this is a microcosm of what awaits me out there. No, I'm going to stand for it right this moment. And it's terribly inspiring. And I want to thank my students for that education they give us, because they make our job doubly meaningful.
This is Jose Padin, professor of sociology, who has been with Portland State University for 18 years, joining us in the studio, along with Patricia Schechter, a professor of history who teaches women's history and public history and has been at Portland State University since 1995. This hour, of course, we've been talking about the struggle of the Portland State University professors and their union, the American Association of University Professors, that declared impasse earlier this week and is facing the possibility of a strike. I'd like to have you both back on, hopefully, to declare a victory in the contract negotiations and when that strike is averted. But we know that the students are standing behind the teachers in this, and we have heard from students today, and that tomorrow there will be a walkout and a rally. Thursday, February 27th, 11:30 a.m. The rally is at noon in the South Park blocks at Portland State University. I want to thank you so much, both, for joining us. And
thanks. It's great to be here.
Thank you. And if you want to stay informed, you don't have to be a Facebook user, but you can go on the web to the PSUAUP Facebook site, and you'll see a stream of current information. And it'll give you ideas of what sorts of things you can do to support this important fight.
Great. Thanks so much. We're going to go out with a song that started us off this morning. David Robick's newest song, inspired by the Portland teacher struggle, The Lives of Children.
Money for other things, but not for education. The rich keep getting richer while they're shutting down the schools, raiding teachers' pension funds, taking us for fools. taking us for fools, but there's only so far that can go. 'Cause if you keep on pushing people, they'll eventually push back, you know. If you keep pushing people each day of the week, you can't expect them always to just turn.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host an open house to say goodbye to our interim station manager, Victoria Stoppiello,
and to welcome our new co-managers, Monica Beamer and Mike Crenshaw.
Please come to KBOO on March 1st between noon and 4 p.m. for greeting and meeting, snacks, tours, and a general celebration of the start of our 46th year broadcasting.
KBOO is located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, a half block south of Burnside in Portland.
Again, this March 1st, noon to 4, here at your community radio station, KBOO. More information can be found at kboo.fm.
Good morning. You are tuned to KBOO, KBOO Portland. Coming right up at 9, we'll hear Economic Update this morning with Richard Wolf. He'll discuss how Soviet socialism actually worked and the decline of inadequacy of pensions in the United States. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, host Dennis Bernstein speaks with law professor Francis Boyle about the possibility of partitioning, about possible partitioning of Ukraine and what that might mean. Also, Dennis remembers the late poet-photographer Frank Espada. And at 11 o'clock on The Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter speaks with Karen Foster, author of No Way, Baby, Exploring, Understanding, and Defending the Decision Not to Have Children. And we thank you, KBOO members. Your support makes this station possible. If you would like to become a member, please go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today.
Welcome, friends. This is Economic Update, a weekly program devoted to the economic dimensions of our lives. What we earn, what we spend, save, invest, what's happening to our wages, all of that. I'm your host, Richard Wolf. Been a professor of economics all my adult life at several universities, and I currently teach at the New School University in New York City. And I also write economics columns for a variety of publications, but especially for truthout.org. That's a courageous, independent source of news and analysis every day. Check them out at truthout.org. If you're interested in this program and the economic analyses that we offer, the news that we bring you, please know that we have two websites where you can pursue all of this information and find a great deal more. The two websites are rdwolf.com with two Fs and democracyatwork.info. Both those websites are available 24/7 free of charge. And in addition to all the information, written material, audio files, interviews, even entire classrooms that I've taught at universities, in addition to them being available to you 24/7 for free, both websites offer you a way to communicate with us, Let us know what you like and don't like about this program, questions you have, thoughts, criticisms, all of that. We read every single one, and we use what we get from you to shape the programs. So once again, rdwolf2fs.com and democracyatwork.info. And both of those websites also allow you to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. Just go to the websites, either of them, click on those icons, Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, and you can follow us on a regular basis as well. Well, today I want to start with a number of short economic updates. So many things to comment on, so little time. The first one is the Olympics, and there are some economic and broader implications of the Olympics. The whole idea of the Olympics, all the way back to ancient Greece when they began, was to have groups, communities, cities, countries overcome their differences, their distances, their hostilities, their arguments, to do something that the whole human race could together enjoy. And that was what the human being, in this case the human being focused on athletics, could achieve. What spectacular jumping and running and hurling a discus or whatever it was, to see what engaged human beings, our fellow citizens, could do, regardless of the community they came from, the religion they had, the origin of their birth, and so on. What do we have today? Well, what tends to happen, and I've been watching the Olympics like most of you have, has been that the athleticism gets pushed back. And what is foregrounded is who wins and who loses, not the beauty of what is being achieved here. Which country gets an advantage? How many medals do you have? What country is plowing money in there to get the benefits, the profits that come from the news teams that come to your country and eat in your restaurants and live in your hotels? It's sort of the pollution of the whole beauty of the idea back into a competitive struggle, company versus company, country versus country. It's kind of sad. Second thing I want to comment on is an act of courage, a remarkable act.